The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
We begin with a new and disheartening poll on the direction of where our country is headed and what they reveal about the core values that have defined us as a country for generations. New Wall Street Journal polls showing patriotism, religious faith, having children, and hard work have declined in importance to Americans.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, the question is, why is that, right? And what can we do to change it? I've got great hope for this country. I personally believe America is an anointed nation. I do. To bring good. I mean, look at the good that's come from this country already and the role we played on the global scene. Our country used to be defined by people who worked hard, who were patriotic, who went to church every Sunday, right? Churches were overflowing, regardless of your denomination. They were involved in their communities. They also, you know, America was known for family, right? That's how it used to be. Well, the Wall Street Journal, they worked with a nonpartisan research firm from the University of Chicago called the National Opinion Research Center, or NORC, and they wanted to find out, hey, are these values still in place? Oh, unsurprisingly, the answer was no. The journal first asked, you know, these questions back in 98, 25 years ago. Then, you know, back then, 62% said that religion was important to them. 70% said patriotism was important. So 6 out of 10, 7 out of 10. Today, those numbers are down to 39 and 38%. So a little about 4 out of 10 people think that's important. When you don't have religion and you don't have patriotism, we are a nation asunder. We are a nation in trouble. Huge drops. We're talking back in 98, almost 6 out of 10 people said having children was important, right? Having children was important. Today, 1 out of 3 people think it's important, 30%. I mean, those stats alone should tell you where the heart of a lot of American people are. When you don't want children, you know, you don't have hope for the future. John Paul II said, you know, as the family goes, so goes the nation, so goes the whole world, right? Family, it's so key. I talk about it a lot. That's reflected when they say 78% of the participants indicated that they don't feel confident that, you know, life for their children's generation will be better than it has been for them. So let me ask you that question too. And Dr. Ann Hendershot's going to be stopping by. I want to get her take on this. Do you have kids? Do you have grandkids? Do you have nieces and nephews? Do you think that their generation is going to be better than what you had? Have things changed? And maybe every generation thinks, in my time, you know, it was great. We did that. You know, maybe that's a generational thing. Or do you think with some of the things we've been talking about, I mean, the indoctrination in the schools. We talked about ChatGPT, how that's going to transform life as we know it. I could go through a whole litany of things. I'm not going to do it right now. Are those things going to be for the good of the future? Will their future be richer? Will it be better? Will we get back to these moral values or not? What's grown in importance, and this is really stunning to me. You know, I've often shared that study about when they asked young kids, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And it wasn't, hey, I want to be an astronaut. That's what I wanted to be, right? Or you want to be a doctor. No, the kids want to be famous, right? Or the study looked at money, right? It's all about money anymore. It says what grew in importance was money. They said 25 years ago, 25 years ago, 31% said the almighty dollar was important to them. I'm shocked. That's low, okay? 31%, 1 out of 3. Great, good for them. That's a great number. Today, the number has climbed up to 43%. Aside from money, including seniors on all age groups, they attached far less important to values than they did back in 98. And that should give us all pause. I'm joined today by Dr. Ann Hendershot. She's a professor of sociology and the director of the Veritas Center at Franciscan University of Steubenville, and she's one of our nation's leading Catholic sociologists and one of my favorite guests here. And it's a delight to have her. I wanted her to be able to break some of this down for us. Doctor, thank you for your time. Good afternoon.
Oh, I'm happy to be on, Drew. Yeah, this is kind of a concern. Yes, it is.
Yeah, big time.
But when you really break it down, and I'm glad you invited me to do that, And you look at age and you look at what was happening in 1998 versus now, we had a whole different cohort of people responding to this kind of a study. It's a very small study, 1,000 people, but if it's representative, I don't have a problem with that. I'm a sociologist, and, you know, if it's representative. But that's a small study, 1,000, and it has a margin of error of 4 percentage points. So that's another thing to take into account. But let's look at patriotism. 23% of people under 30 value patriotism, but 59% of seniors value patriotism. Is it possible that the people under 30 will begin to value patriotism when they see that their country could go someplace else? Because I think that my father's generation, who was probably could have taken the survey in 1998, very patriotic because he served in World War II. So we're very much shaped by our society. And patriotism can very much emerge if China decides to send more than a balloon over our country. So I don't look at any. This is a snapshot today, yesterday. I guess they took it whenever they took it last week. Everything can change. And as you age, your respect for things gets bigger. So we had generational effects in 1998. My father, who is 92 and died a few years ago, he would have been in the cohort that said patriotism is very important. Yeah. And my son, my own son, went to West Point because his grandpa was in the Army and he wanted to serve. And my son is, you know, young still. He's very patriotic, but he's a little over 30 now. Will that new cohort begin to appreciate patriotism?
Well, here's the thing. When 9/11 took place, we had a lot of patriotism rise, you know, when America was attacked. And we saw enrollment. Right now, the military is having real problems with recruitment. Every branch but the Marines has failed to meet the requirements. To that point, though, if there was a conflict with, you know, let's say, China, or there was something going on that sucked us into the conflict over in Eastern Europe, I think patriotism would rise. And I think your point is a great one. That was definitely a generational thing. But clearly, you know, from what they're seeing here in the study, younger Americans in particular are placing low importance on values like patriotism and family and God. Why is that? Is another factor the breakdown of the family? I mean, why is this a growing trend that they're placing less credence or value on those values?
Schools are a very big problem right now. You know, the Pledge of Allegiance is out of a lot of schools now. That used to be a very big deal. From kindergarten on, children recited the pledge. So patriotism is not taught in the schools. They don't appreciate the military and what they've done. They don't appreciate our government and what they've done. Certainly it is somewhat the breakdown of the family, but I don't blame the family as much as I do the schools. I think there's huge problems in the schools, just huge problems. And well, COVID also had played a role. One of the issues they're looking at is involvement in community. And that's down to 27% from a high of 62% in 2019. Now, some of that is generational. That generation, the World War II generation that has passed on, they were part of Elks clubs. They were part of, you know, all sorts of civic organizations. We tend not to do that. I know we talked about Bowling Alone, that book, Bowling Alone. That's still very much in play. We don't join bowling leagues anymore the way our grandparents might have or our parents. We bowl alone. And that's kind of sad, I think. And COVID just exacerbated that. But having children bothers me the most. I have my students in Intro to Sociology read a book called Children of Men, and it's a kind of a dystopian novel, and they love it because it's about a society where no children have been born for 20 years. Wow. And you would think that everybody would enjoy this free sex because you can't get pregnant because everybody's sterile, so wouldn't that be fun? No, actually nobody's having sex either, because when there's not the possibility of children, children make our future, they make us, they give meaning to our lives. And we just don't understand that. But even seniors don't appreciate children. Seniors today, like my age, I'm a baby boomer. 32% of seniors didn't think that having children was important. And there's not that much difference. 23% of under 30-year-olds said having children was not that important. You know, that's very low. That's very, very low. That concerns me because we are already having a birth dearth, you know, a lack of children. Yeah. We had shows about that. I remember I did a show with you about the lack of children being born. And that's the one that worries me more than others. Now, religion certainly is a big one, too. We should probably talk about that one.
Let's do that. Before we do that, let me give out the phone number. If you want to join us, maybe you have a perspective or you've got a question, you want to join the conversation, I'll open the phones. You can get in. Sound off. Love to get your perspective on the numbers. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. And one of the big questions we should explore, too, and maybe you have an answer for it, is, you know, how do we restore love for these values, for family, for patriotism, for things that are now in decline? Why has money become so important, and fame? You know, it's kind of crazy. Feel free to sound off. I'd love to hear your perspective. My guest today, if you're just tuning in, is Dr. Ann Hendershot. And before we jump to religion, just patriotism for a second. We talked about how patriotism rises and falls. In that study, how do you think people define patriotism? Are they viewing it as my country, right or wrong? Or are they looking with a different perspective? Are there contaminating ideologies that are now in here? Now we see a rise of kind of a Marxist or socialistic agenda infiltrating schools, entertainment, even Capitol Hill. So it's kind of muddy water.
Yeah, well, we have to look at, this is where politics enters its ugly head in terms of patriotism. Democrats view, and I don't want to say blanket all Democrats, but Democrats voters look a little bit more at patriotism as nationalism, and they're very repelled by it. They worry about it. They, you know, equate it to Hitler. 23% of Democrats say that patriotism is very important and they would see it as right-wing nationalism. 59% of Republicans say that patriotism is important. So Republicans are more patriotic. But the left views that as nationalist, like we're all wearing Hitler suits here. Right. You know, we know we're not. It's just we love our country, and we want to defend it. But there's huge political differences.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more. When it comes to religion, we were talking about family too, right? People, the elderly don't want to have, you know, don't see children as important in younger generation. You know, we're dealing with a whole litany of things that are keeping, you know, births down. I mean, we have this contraceptive mentality. We've got a lot of kids graduating now with a lot of debt. They want to wait to have kids because they want to, you know, pay off those debts. Or, you know, you've got, in addition to that, a whole litany of other things. I can go through a whole battery of these things, but I'm curious if there's a connection between the decline in religion and in children. They're not seeing that connection.
Yeah, I know. And they're not getting that biblical worldview of, you know, passing on your life to your children, but they're finding meaning in other ways. You know, Ross Douhat from the New York Times, I love his work.
Sure.
I have my students read his book called Bad Religion, because we're not giving up religion. We're just replacing true religion with bad religion, like Oprah Church and New Age religions. And CRT, critical race theory, becomes a religion. The transgender movement, LGBTQ, becomes a religion. And I don't mean that to minimize those movements, but that's where people are getting their meaning now, instead of getting their meaning from true religion, from God, because that's what I believe is true religion. Jesus Christ died for our sins. You know, this is Lent. That gives me great meaning in my life. They don't get that meaning because they never learned it for some reason. We've stopped sending the children to Sunday school. We've stopped taking them to church. And maybe church wasn't giving it to them. You know, I don't want to blame people for not going to church. I have to look at the churches, too. I'm very blessed to be at Franciscan, where I get great meaning just going to Mass every day there. It's filled, and there's singing, and there's energy, and the Holy Spirit is present, and we receive Jesus in the Eucharist. People don't get that meaning anymore, so they find it elsewhere. That's why they want to be social media stars and influencers and rich, because they think that will give their lives meaning. We know it won't, you and I, but they don't know that.
It really is unfortunate. And the number one thing people want to do is be famous. I don't know how we got to that
point. Well, they think it will fill up their empty lives because their lives are empty without God.
How do we lose God? I mean, it's so fundamental. It's been part of people's lives for millennia. What happened? Was it materialism that hardened the heart or put scales on the eyes? I mean, what was it that we've seen such a, and you're the sociologist, I mean, almost the trajectory is probably pretty sharp, this incredible rejection of God in our current day and time. I mean, how did we lose God?
Well, I don't think we've lost him.
I'm not saying everybody has, but I'm saying in this data, clearly you're seeing the rejection of God. Those people are going to church. They're leaving organized religion, and they want to be famous, and they want to have wealth. Those are the priorities for the people. Patriotism has decreased. Devotion has decreased. What caused that? I mean, where was the turning point? What are the things that set that in motion?
I think they weren't finding what they were looking for in their churches. And I don't want to blame all the churches, but churches have to nourish people. And if they're not being nourished, they're not going to go. And so I don't want to just blame the people for not going to church. I think the churches played a role in this too. Not all churches. I mean, like I say, I'm blessed to be in the best place on earth, but so many people don't have that. They go to these churches and then they just stop going because it's not fulfilling, and then they find it elsewhere because we don't. I mean, Durkheim would say we're always looking for meaning in our lives, and if we don't find it in traditional religion, we're going to find it in weirdness. Some people join cults, some of these groups are like cults. They become cults for them, and the online community can become a cult. They say it's addictive, and I think it can be also. I agree with that. But I'm not hopeless because we have these periods of our society. The evangelicals certainly know, and you know that phenomenon that happened on that evangelical campus.
Oh, sure.
You know, in North Carolina, I think you talked about that, you, on the air?
Yep.
That went on forever. That shows people looking for meaning, I would say. They stayed up all night for weeks.
Sure. I mean, the Holy Spirit was clearly at work there. And I have to agree. I think religion and faith really will be the answer. I often said on the air here, if you don't know your faith, right, if we don't know what we have, how are you going to live it? So I think a failure in catechesis has done a lot too, because, you know, if you don't know that cohabitating or having an abortion, you know, is not good for your relationship, or it's not good for you, you know, if you're not being taught that Jesus is truly present in the Eucharist, or, you know, that confession will liberate you and free you and give you the grace you need to rise above this proclivity to these really deadly patterns of behavior, you know, sin, you know, of course you're going to continue down this wide and easy path, but to your own peril. So I think the faith is so much to do. And I'm kind of excited, to be honest with you, because we are now in a Eucharistic revival, right? The bishops see this. They see the decline in the church. They see that number of nuns who've exited the church, the NONESs. I'm a hopeful person. We see these numbers. You said this is a snapshot. I think it's true, but I think the pendulum can only swing so far in one direction, and then you see the bad fruit of it. You know, I clearly think we'll see that.
Yeah, I think so, too. I'm very hopeful. And I have a lot of evangelical friends. You know, I used to teach at King's College briefly, Evangelical College in New York City. And there is going to be another. They believe strongly in the new awakening. And I have to agree, I think, because you can only go so long in this type of period we're in right now, this apparent godlessness, although it's not. I mean, you know, there's some new movies about the Jesus movement. Have you heard about that? A new movie with Kelsey Graham.
No, I haven't seen that.
That's wonderful. Yeah.
Have you seen it?
I have not, no, but it's on my calendar. I am going to see it. You know, we've seen it in the past. It happened in the 70s, so it can happen again.
There
have been remoralization periods in our culture. Yeah. You know, one good thing about this study, 43% of everyone, young people too, say we've gone too far in accepting transgenderism. So that's a positive. I think, of course, you know, 57% think we haven't gone far enough, probably. Mm-hmm. No, some think it's just fine what we're doing. But,
well, you know, we see the bad, fruit of it. I mean, inevitably, yeah. You know, we saw contraceptives enter the mainstream culture. We saw the fruit of that being abortion. You know, we see the damage that has come from that. We saw marriage being redefined, and soon you're going to see polyamory. You're seeing all sorts of other things. You're seeing persecution for people who conscientiously object to that, like the bakers and the photographers and things along those lines. Mm-hmm. Eventually, this stuff, yeah, it collapses. I mean, evil can never stand, and when you promote things that are antithetical to God, it only has so much life. You know, it only has so much life. And the solution to the problems of the world, as you point out, and it's a valid point, it's God. It really is. We're looking to fill that hole in our heart for some reason, and the only thing that can fill it is God. All right, let's grab a call or two. Go ahead, doctor. You want to respond? Go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to say money won't do it. And there were some positives in that study. I don't want to say everything's 63% said companies should not take a stand on social issues.
Yeah.
So, you know, good luck, Disney. The NHL just took a stand. You know, they're not going to be wearing the rainbow, I don't think, any longer.
I mean, it's smart. It's just bad business, too. And I see some of these companies are doing it. Why would you alienate a certain segment of your population? You know, we talk about these baby companies that support Planned Parenthood. Why would you encourage, you know, the abortion of children who need to buy your diapers, right? Silly. Carol in Downers Grove, Illinois.
Hi.
Thanks for your patience. Good afternoon.
Hi. Yeah, I would just like to make the comment, and I'm talking to parents when I'm saying this, that, you know, we focus all our efforts in pushing our kids to do the best academically, pushing our kids to do the best with athletics and sports competitions. And, you know, this is like the new god of, you know, this era. You don't find parents saying, you know, have the family that God wants you to have. In other words, I think if all parents are honest with themselves, their best memories are of their children. Maybe when they're young and they hear them giggling upstairs, you know, they know how much the kids are just having fun together. And then, you know, one day those kids are adults. And, well, we bought into the whole program. We have 9 kids.
Oh, wow.
Oh, good for you. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, I don't know anybody that has 4, 5, 6 or more kids that isn't a truly happy person, because you know why? They got more of what everybody else that had kids.
I love it. Well, Carol, thank you for your comments. I'm going to let Dr. Hendershot respond because I got to take a short pause. Doctor, I'll give you thoughts. We'll come back and we'll take a few more calls, but go right ahead.
Yes. Well, at Franciscan, we have lots of families that have 9 children, and it's so wonderful to have them year after year in the same family. And we just love those families. So thank you so much for having those children.
Yeah, thank you for your yes. If you're on hold, I'll get you on the air. Hang out with me. I've got to take a short pause, though. We come back, our conversation will continue. Dr. Ann Hendershot is my guest, taking a look at a recent poll that is putting its finger on the pulse of American values. There's some negatives in this, you know, decrease in patriotism and God and family, but there's some positives as well. My question really is, what do we do to turn the ship around, right? And like a cruise ship, sometimes it takes a long time to turn around. We got to start, but what brings about that change? We can talk about that and much more. Our conversation will continue right after this.
The hope lives here. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, looking for a new job? How about one that offers opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Don't stop believing. Hold on. Yeah, don't stop believing. I'm believing in what makes America great. And that's God, that's family, right? And it's country. And if you watch too much news, you can think, man, the country's on fire. We're in trouble, right? I don't believe so. I think Relevant Radio is one of the fruits that are out there to shine the light of truth on so many of these issues, give you perspective. There's lots of polls that are out there, and I think they're important to look at. We're looking at one right now about how American values are going by the wayside. I'm speaking with Dr. Ann Hendershot. I've been telling my producers, Tom and Maggie, that, you know, I'm just getting tired of all the bad news. I feel bad because one of my producers, I'm telling that constantly. I said, we need to have some hope. We need some good news. We need to not just highlight what's going on, but it seems every day the headlines are filled with so much of these things that should give us all pause. All this transgender stuff that's going on, the political division, the threats of violence, the real violence, it's dragging. I don't know, it's dragging me down. I'm sure you probably feel the same way, right? Are you sick of it? I've had friends say, oh, I just can't listen. I can't watch. They stop watching TV. They stop watching the news. The Wall Street Journal, they had a report that came out. We were talking about it. If you missed it, go back to the podcast. We'll have that up as soon as we sign off here today. But the stats and the data that comes from that doesn't show our country going in the right direction necessarily, because we're looking at the wrong place. If we don't have God, if we don't have Jesus, then there's no hope. Our hope is not in nostalgia for America. It's not in a more robust economy. It's certainly not in any politician, right? No matter how great they sound. Your hope has to be in Jesus Christ. And you have to look for him. You have to look to him in all the challenges of this life. You know, is it Hebrews? I think it's a letter. It's in the letter to the Hebrews where there's this great phrase that says, that sure and firm anchor. That's what the Lord is. Because we're in a tumultuous sea right now. You know, and as Christians, we're also called to bring the good news to the world. And in this day and age, that can mean bringing the good news to people. Maybe they've left your parish. Maybe they've left your family. So how you do that, I think, is just as important as the fact that you do it. And one of the ways of bringing them back, I think, are the three classic virtues of truth and goodness and beauty. And, of course, truth is contested these days, right? What is truth? We live in a dictatorship of relativism, as Benedict XVI talks about. But what people believe is goodness is also challenged. But when you're confronted with true beauty, that can be life-changing. And I'm joined right now, in addition to Dr. Ann Hendershot, by Jimmy Mitchell. He's founder of the Love Good Academy, which is dedicated to evangelizing through beauty. And I just thought this would be a great complement to our conversation today. I just authored a book. It'll be coming out from Ignatius, called Let Beauty Speak. And the Let Beauty Speak is the title, followed by The Art of Being Human in a Culture of Noise. Hey, Jimmy, great to have you with me today. Congratulations on your book.
Thank you, Drew. It's great to be with you and all your listeners today.
I am delighted to have you here. Beauty, right? Who was it that had that very famous line that said, beauty will save the world? I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's so true, isn't it? Give me your perspective. Well, you wrote a book on beauty. We live in a world where there's a lot of ugliness right now. Would you agree that beauty is one of the antidotes to these problems?
That's right. Yeah, you're quoting the great Russian novelist Fyodor Dostoevsky. He said, beauty will save the world, in one of his classic novels called The Idiot. And I think that phrase resonates with everybody, you know, really across faith and politics and socioeconomic situations. There's something about beauty that truly has this universal appeal. I sometimes call it the last standing transcendental. You know, you said it so well, that truth is contested. Truth is very much held in suspicion. At least objective truth is held in suspicion in our post-Christian culture. And goodness, for so many people, it always comes across as some kind of imposition. But beauty really knows no enemies, whether it's art, music, books, great architecture. It has a way of piercing through the heart. And I would argue, even more than all those great artistic expressions, it's the beauty of holiness ultimately found in the saints.
Yeah, beauty, people often say it's in the eye of the beholder. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, well, Plato would absolutely argue against that, and I will never be smarter than Plato or Augustine and Thomas Aquinas, who built off of this idea that just like truth, beauty is an objective reality. It's not something that can be divorced from truth, and therefore there's no way it can be anything but objective. Now, what's really wonderful about beauty, which is not that different from truth, we can all appreciate it in different ways. We can all look at a great work by Caravaggio or listen to a great song by Mozart and appreciate totally different aspects of beauty as it's being, poured forth in those melodies or in those brushstrokes of a painting. But what we can't say is that there's not degrees of beauty, that there's not an objectivity to beauty. Yeah. Ultimately, we're talking about God himself, who's the author of all that is true, good, and beautiful. And he cannot be divided unto himself. He has to be one. He has to be unified.
Amen to that. I love that. My guest today, Jimmy Mitchell, Dr. Ann Hendershot is with us as well. Doctor, I'd like to pull you into the conversation. You heard part of that conversation, your thoughts as well.
Well, I'd love to read this book. It sounds so wonderful. Because what I've been noticing is that people are attempting to make unbeautiful things, even their own bodies, with piercings and scary things that they're doing to their bodies. Yeah. Is that, do you address that in your book, why the physical beauty in the individual is trying to be defiled? Is that a conscious thing, do you think?
It's a wonderful question, and I think it's a very apropos one right now, because certainly, you could look at tattoos and piercings. You could look at sort of the growing confusion around transgenderism, all forms of gender ideology. There is something of a self-hatred at the heart of much of that. Perhaps not all of it, right? We don't know exactly what's going on in the heart of all these different people, but if you really have a profound appreciation of your dignity, of being created in the image of God, male and female, he created them, then certainly there's going to be a certain awe and wonder, before the human body, our own and that of others, an awe and wonder that leads to profound respect and a desire to uphold dignity and protect beauty. So I think you're right. We have sort of turned a lot of this on its head in today's culture. I think that's how broken we are, that we've even begun calling what is objectively ugly beautiful. But we, of course, know it's a counterfeit, which is why it doesn't deep down bring satisfaction or we'll say lasting fulfillment.
Yeah, if you want to join the conversation, let me do this. I'll open the phones. If you're on hold, I'll get you on the air, too. The number's 888-914-9149. Feel free to pull up a chair and sound off as well. But before I go to the phones, I want to follow up, Jimmy, on this concept of beauty, because you mentioned, I think, in the book that you can't argue with beauty. What do you mean by that? Just that, because as I go, we go back to Plato, which you disagree with, of course. There are some things that some people think are gorgeous and other people think is not so beautiful. Somebody may think their tattooed body is beautiful. Others may say it's horrible. How do we define beauty?
Yeah, it's funny because there are some kind of wonderful and we'll say philosophical definitions out there. Plato does describe it as, that which pleases upon being seen, that which delights the senses and elates the soul. In that sense, we are talking about a universal human experience, right? Whether it's, beholding a sunrise or standing atop a mountain range or holding a newborn child in our arms. I think all of us can recognize that there's something breathtaking. There's something otherworldly, something truly transcendent happening in those moments. And I think one of our huge entry points for evangelizing our post-Christian culture right now is to simply help people connect the dots between those experiences of beauty, to connect the dots with the maker and the origin of all that is beautiful, who's of course God himself. And there's so many young people in my line of work who are actually quite eager to make that connection, because suddenly everything can become charged with God's grandeur, to use a phrase of Gerard Manley Hopkins. If we have the eyes to see it, these connections and these dots, can be connected all around us all day. And there's something just wonderful and life-giving about that kind of lens through which you see reality.
That's awesome. All right, my guest, Jimmy Mitchell, Dr. Ann Hendershot. Go ahead, doctor. I'll let you follow up.
Yeah, well, I couldn't help but think of Bishop Barron's Catholic series, because I think that must have – do you talk about that in your book at all, that beautiful series that he did about beauty, about the beautiful things we have in our church? I think a lot that brought a lot of people to the church just to see the beauty of the church, the beauty of the art, the beauty of the music. He just did a beautiful job with that. Do you mention that at all in your book?
It's funny, I don't, and it's largely because I've not seen the entirety of that series. I've only seen excerpts, but when I studied abroad, I was living in London, but I had five-day weekends to travel all over Western Europe, and because of that, I stepped into some of the most beautiful basilicas and cathedrals in Christendom, and that brought about my own deepening of conversion. It was in those encounters with beauty in those incredible churches that I developed a love for the Eucharist. That's the season of life. I began going to daily mass and praying a daily rosary. So beauty has this wild way of just penetrating through the noise, reaching into our hearts, and ultimately leading us to the truth that is Christ himself.
Love that.
That's wonderful. That's a beautiful story. So you didn't need Bishop Barron. You went to the source.
That's a good point. A lot of those videos that he put out over the course of that Catholicism series were in places that I had been to at some point in my life that transformed me like they have him, many others.
You see beautiful works of art like the Pietà. You can see the Duomo. You can take a look at a lot of these beautiful places around the world, architecturally, artistically, even a sunset. Is there a common denominator in these things? In general, are there qualities that are visually or aesthetically pleasing to the senses, like, landscape or a symmetry, proportion, harmony, balance, something like that? Is there a thread that runs through some of these things, whether we're looking at a landscape or a painting or listening to a piece of music?
Yeah, Drew, those are all really good words, actually. Order, proportion, a sense of integrity and unity. It's interesting because, I'll be the first to admit I'm not a philosopher of aesthetics. And I actually make a pretty quick turn in the first chapter of this book to help people see that beauty is not something that only artists and creatives can tap into or even appreciate. And that comes from years of living in Nashville. Many of my closest friends were singer-songwriters, but I would see this power that beauty had, not only in their craftsmanship, but also in how they lived their lives. And when their lives were in some way aligned with their craft, what they brought to the world, whether that was, a performance or an album, or in some cases, I know some authors, who write books, it's incredible to see the exponential effect that those works, bring to people when they're, again, aligned with a life well-lived, a life beautifully lived. And that's where I think all of us can tap into this way of beauty that, the 10 principles that the book talks about, everything from, living a life of virtue, having that deep interior freedom, wonder and sacramental imagination, virtuous friendship ordered towards excellence, prayer, leisure, work, all of these have a way of captivating our increasingly broken and very bruised world. I mean, look at what happened in Nashville just a couple of days ago. That doesn't happen when a soul is seized by the love of God and is utterly aware of how precious and good and beautiful they are because of who created them. You just can't even imagine it. We obviously cannot imagine it, but you have to be so far gone into the ugly and the false and the counterfeit that is so much of our culture today that you become capable of evil that's beyond our imagination.
Well, stay with me, Jimmy. Jimmy Mitchell is my guest. Dr. Ann Hendershot is here. Doctor, thank you, too, for all that you do. It's a delight having you here with us today. If you're just joining me, we're talking where we are today. We were talking a little bit about American values with Dr. Ann Hendershot and what the solution to that may be. Beauty clearly is one of those. I'll be right back. Hey, looking for a new job? How about one that offers opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Turn it up. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
You don't even know. I can make your hands clap.
Well, it's good to be with you today. Thanks for joining me. Hey, I want to encourage you to do something. Go back, check out our podcast. Maggie will have it up as soon as we sign off. We'll give her about 30 minutes to an hour to get it up. But a little bit later, you can revisit this conversation and a lot of them. We talked about the Elon Musk ChatGPT slowdown that they're calling for a pause on, and so many other issues today. But if you missed part of this conversation, a great woman with Dr. Ann Hendershot, who was with us a little bit earlier, there was a, and she's a very gifted sociologist. The Wall Street Journal had done a study, a poll, and they had done this back about 25 years ago, and they're seeing a trend where people are losing their sense of patriotism, their sense of family, their sense of God in this country, where younger Americans are placing less importance on that, and money has seemed to increase. A whole litany of other things there. The question I threw out is, what's the solution to this? How do we remedy this? You know, and we can look at all the negatives. There's a new book coming out, and I thought it'd be great to just kind of weave this into what we're talking about today on beauty, And here's the thing about beauty. It pierces the heart. Doesn't it? It brings you peace. It's as the Hebrew says, it's a sure and firm anchor in a very troubled time. And we have these beautiful transcendental truths. And where you talk about truth and goodness and beauty, that's what we need if we want to change the culture. That's what we need. My guest today is Jimmy Mitchell. He authored a book called Let Beauty Speak, The Art of Being Human in a Culture of Noise. And that's where we are, right? There's this cacophony of noise, this din. Beauty pierces that and brings peace to the heart. And it's good to have you back with me here, Jimmy. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your book. I'm looking forward to it. When does that actually hit the shelves? Can people pre-order that?
You know, it actually hit the shelves this week. So you can get it pretty much everywhere books are found. But the easiest way is just letbeautyspeak.com. It's all right there.
I love it. You know, one of the things we're seeing in this culture of noise, we are more connected than we have ever been thanks to technology. But one of the things I'm seeing, I talked about this the other day, reports are showing that loneliness is on the increase and people don't have a sense of community anymore. Are you finding that as well? What are you seeing?
I could not agree more with that insight. I think that's actually somewhere near the heart of our society's deepest wounds, this profound sense of loneliness and isolation. I don't know if that was ever stronger or on more fuller display than when we went through those initial lockdowns with COVID-19. You just could see that technology, for example, was never going to be enough. That social media and this sense of digital or virtual connection was never going to be enough, that we are truly incarnational people. You know, it's sort of one of the paradoxes of beauty, that it actually gives us a profound sense of belonging. You know, when we encounter beauty, in the words of C.S. Lewis, we want to become one with it. Mm-hmm. And the way that we do that ultimately is by becoming one with the source of beauty, who's, again, God himself. So the paradox is that beauty gives us this profound sense of belonging while also reminding us that we're not home yet. You talked about hope, not in nostalgia, not in the economy, not in our present circumstances, but rather, the sure and firm anchor that is Jesus, to have our hope in Jesus. And even beauty reminds us that we're made for heaven. We're made for the beatific vision, the eternal glory of God that awaits us. So it gives you a certain peace, even in the ache of life, when you realize, there's more coming here. More coming. The best, in fact, is yet to come.
Yeah, beauty is so closely connected to truth and goodness. It really is, and that's what we need more than ever. I think it was Augustine who said that beauty is the splendor of truth, suggesting that true beauty is not merely superficial, right? But it really reflects these deeper realities about the world and about God. And I think you hit on it before we went to break. You talked about virtue, right? You talked about some of those wonderful characteristics of the human heart that really reflect God, and true beauty. We have a few moments. Let's do this. We'll grab a couple calls for you. Andrea is listening to us in Gardena, California. Hi, Andrea. You're on the air with Jimmy Mitchell.
Hey, I called in because, well, I have my feet are damaged and it's hard to walk to the church. So when I do, sometimes it's closed and the only thing that you can see is the Eucharist in the window. And I did call and the office is seldom open, but they say that they don't have any groups for middle-aged women and they don't seem to want to start any, and they don't have any online things for people that are disabled. And I mean, you can get that online if you want to join any one of millions of worldly things, great big communities. I mean, it's like walking into big open arms. But the Catholic Church, the one I love, the one I miss, it's not the same here. And in Canada, my brother is sort of living the life. Like, they still have that going on. They have clubs, they have groups. It's not just a school for kids and then the adults, good luck. You know, and I wish we had that here. And online, with all the things they have, how can we not have that?
Yeah, well, you know what, Andrea, let me hold you for a quick second. I'll let Jimmy respond to you as well, but let me make a suggestion to you. Maybe call the parish. Tell them you're having trouble getting in or you want to spend a little more time there. Somebody will come, take you. They can help you get back in there. Express your concern about that lack of community. But, Jimmy, I'll let you follow up on Andrea.
Andrea, you said you're in California. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm thinking, you know, part of the solution might be long-term to get the heck out of Dodge. You know, I mean, obviously I love California like the rest of them, but there's a reason that a lot of people, you know, are moving to areas in the country right now where the church is thriving. So that's just a reality that I think is worth reckoning with, that there is, in fact, certain corners of our country right now. I'm thinking specifically about Middle America, you know, parts of the Midwest, and then especially the Southeast where the church is thriving. So there's so many programs for people of all ages and so many ways to plug into robust Catholic community and Catholic culture. And let's say it's not possible. Let's say it's not possible to at any point leave California, as 700,000 other people have done since 2020. Let's say that's not possible. I think the answer is exactly what Drew said. We've got to be beacons of hope. We've got to be builders of community and culture and the place where we are planted. And I had to do that in Nashville for a long time. You know, it's a very, very small percentage of Catholics in the great city of Nashville.
Well,
but over the course of a decade, I saw community grow, and it's because bold people opened their doors and started building that kind of community that they've been.
Well, I love that, Jimmy. I want to grab a quick call here, but we're running out of time. But we didn't get a chance to talk about suffering and something that's really important to me, because you talk in your book about how suffering can also be beautiful. We'll have to try to touch on that. But let me sneak Wendy, who's been holding a long time in Maryland, to get on the air with us. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, I was just calling. I'm a 23-year-old stay-at-home wife, recent grad from University of Dallas, and I just wanted to make the point that maybe more wives should consider staying at home with their children. And I just wanted to quote the Council of Trent that the wife should love to remain at home unless compelled by necessity to go out, and she should never presume to leave home without her husband's consent. And I just think that if more women would do this, the beauty of the home would be so enriched. And when we have a beautiful home life, we end up with many beautiful children who grow up to be great adults.
Wendy, thank you. I'm going to give you the final words here, Jimmy. Go right ahead.
Yes, that's a beautiful thought. And there's no doubt that part of what we need is a renewal in every vocation. The beauty of family life, the beauty of the priesthood, the beauty of religious life. We got to pray for young people to be generous, and for those in their vocations to be faithful. And just the final word, as you know, we heard from Drew, suffering is one of the most powerful ways that we can bring beauty into the world by uniting it with Christ here in these final days of Lent.
Amen.
And allowing
Jimmy,
the beauty of his life.
I'm going to hold it right there because I'm out of time. I'm sorry. I'll bring it back. We'll talk more. Jimmy Mitchell, check out his book, Let Beauty Speak.